Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Their mother told them stories of older girls hiding broken glass in other girls' shoes, which sounded like a dark fairy tale. But was there any other kind? Ballet was full of dark fairy tales, and how a dancer prepared her pointe shoes was a ritual as mysterious and private as how she might pleasure herself. It was often indistinguishable.
That's Megan Abbott reading an excerpt from her latest novel, The Turnout, a gripping and suspenseful story set in the world of ballet. And as that reading indicated, ballet isn't all adagio, allegro, and arabesque. It can be very cold-blooded, cutthroat, and competitive. I wasn't expecting this book to be so compelling, because when it comes to ballet, I don't know a pas de basque from a pas de bourrée. But of course, I should have known better. Megan has crafted another propulsive thriller that explores family connections, femininity, sexuality, and power that will keep you reading until the wee small hours of the morning and beyond. She joined us from her home in Queens to talk about why she finally set a thriller in the world of ballet.
I had always imagined that one day I'd write about it. It just is a world that's always fascinated me. You know, I was one of those girls that tried to take ballet class and sort of failed miserably, but the sort of enchantment of the ballet stuck with me, and it's sort of the exotic nature of that life. But I just didn't have the story. And then I started to think about the studio I attended was run by these two sisters. And they're very different from the sisters in The Turnout, but we just imagined all kinds of romantic and interesting possibilities for them as we sort of stood in class and tried to do our moves. And so I started to think about what it would be like for two sisters who run a school together, and it sort of came from there.
Mm. Can you talk a bit about the research that links ballet and the concept of effortless perfection in women, and also how you weaved this idea of effortless perfection into the characters in your novel?
Yeah, I guess I was thinking about why I connect to ballet and why many women do. And there is this notion in ballet of, you know, you're supposed to be this sort of ethereal being, this sort of graceful creature that glides across the stage and seems to move through space so easily. And part of that is that you're supposed to look like it's so easy. Of course you can do this. And sort of hiding, masking all that exertion and the physical toll and the blood, sweat, and tears that are involved to make your body do that. And you started to think about that in relation to women in general. There's this sort of facade that a woman's supposed to always put on, and she's never supposed to let them see her sweat and to be able to take on everything and just sort of be the people pleaser and the achiever. And I think so many women get caught up in that. I know I have. There's a sort of tyranny in it. And maybe ballet is partially required because of the precision. But I think for the rest of us, it can really exert a toll.
Mm-hmm. I understand that your book was inspired by listening to the Dirty John podcast. How did that podcast influence The Turnout?
Yeah, it's funny because there was no ballet in that, listeners might remember that it was very popular when it came out, but it was about this sort of serial predator who is has no relation to the book, but of women, and he would romance them and brutalize and rob them blind, but was really interested in the response to it. And you know, they always say never read the comment section, but I was really intrigued by all this anger that I saw in it, directed not at the serial predator, who in fact is a murderer, but at the women who fell for him. And it was very angry that how could you be so stupid? There, all the red flags were there. And just started to think about what that was about. It felt like a kind of way of pushing something away and saying, that could never be me. I would never do that. It was like almost like trying to stave off something. And so I really wanted to explore that dynamic. And in the novel, you know, is to have one of the sisters, the older one, Dara, be very judgmental of her younger sister Marie's sort of romantic choices and try to figure out what that's like from the inside, how one might come to feel that way and why.
Yeah. The turnout finds the Durant sisters preparing their students for the school's annual performance of The Nutcracker. It's fascinating how the story of Tchaikovsky's ballet echoes the plot of your novel. How did you come up with that idea to get that kind of synchronicity going?
It was a bit of sheer luck, I have to say. I picked it for very practical reasons, which is that most ballet schools, that's their money maker for the year. And that's where they, not just the ticket sales, but really as a recruitment tool, because, you know, all those little girls like me who sit in the audience 1 year as Nutcracker and then want to take ballet classes so they can be on stage the next Christmas. So I picked it because of that. And it's because the one ballet that people have seen, if they've only seen one, that's the one. But then it turned out to be so perfect and sort of unfold all these other resonances, as it really is a female coming of age story. And in some sense, Dara and Marie, the sisters, though they're adults, are experiencing a coming of age as they've been so nestled in their family home and their family business that they've never really entered the world of true adulthood. And that is sort of the journey in The Nutcracker. And there are darker elements of The Nutcracker, too. I read the original story and I was able to tease out some of that, too. The E.T.A. Hoffman story is really a kind of dark and, let's say, very Freudian fairy tale. And there was some good stuff in there, too.
Yeah. The relationship between Dara and Marie and Dara's husband, Charlie, is very complicated and very layered, very intriguing. How did you go about developing these characters and the ways they relate to each other?
Yeah, that I was really interested in those kinds of families that are so insular. You know, like you can sort of, you know, when you... Let's say you go to someone's house and they have that kind of feeling. You don't even know what they're talking about. It's all inside jokes and inside, passive-aggressive hostility, and all these things are flying by you and you don't really know. And how those, you know, every family has, everybody has a role in it and a way that they're typed. This is the spoiled brat. This is the bossy one. This is, and how you can't escape those roles and the... even if that you're not that way to anyone else in your life, that back at in your family you are, and how that can become stifling, as it is, I think, for Dara, Marie, and Charlie, that they, it's sort of, we're seeing, it's so extreme in their case, as who, so they've lived in their family home for their whole lives, and they've worked in their family studio, so they really have these sort of twin castles that they move between. And so this sort of these roles and rituals and insularity has become stifling, and something's got to break.
Mm-hmm. And something does break, yeah. You have several books, films, and images from movies, songs, and photos that you use to build the story worlds for your novels. What specific things influenced the turnout?
It was really, I do love to look at photos and they're really sort of transporting. And I was looking at a bunch of them for this. It started with these sort of very beautiful photos of ballet, but it was really also some photos of Sally Mann, the photographer, took of her children that sort of in her ideal, I believe it's West Virginia. I could be wrong about that, but it's sort of in nature, her three children, two girls and a boy, and this, how beautiful they are and how they're sort of playing together and sort of swooning and romantic and lovely. And then on the other side, I started looking at a lot of these Deanne Arbus photos, and she took these wonderful, people may know her, she's more famous for taking photos of creepy twin sisters. Her photos can be quite dark and disturbing, and I love them. But I was particularly interested in these photos she took of carnivals. And in the book, there's all these sort of memories that Dara has of going to a carnival with their dad, and of the fire eater and the sword swallower. And Arbus has some great photos of that. And I remember going to this St. Joan of Arc's carnival as a kid in my hometown, and this, how exotic it felt, and seeing these women do these sort of, you know, glorious eye popping feats had a big impact on me. So they were also really, really absorbing, and lots of Todd Hedo and Gregory Crewston, who do these sort of beautiful, sort of ominous suburbs at night. That was another big one.
Yeah. As I was reading The Turnout, I couldn't help but think about Darren Aronofsky's film, Black Swan, and also the Shirley Jackson novel, We Have Always Lived in the Castle. Were those two pieces of work, were those influences on you at all?
Yes. Black Swan, I almost had to work against it, you know, because I was so affected by it when it came out. And I remember when it came out, I thought, well, I can't do a ballet novel for a while. So I waited a decade. it's so striking and sort of haunting. And I know a lot of ballet dancers hate that movie because it sort of, they feel it sort of indulges in certain stereotypes, which sort of always happens when you enter a profession or a world, but it's still inescapable for me because it's sort of so sumptuous in the way that it explores female psychology through the dance. So that was certainly one, but really the bigger one is the Shirley Jackson novel. That's one of my favorite novels of all time. Mm-hmm. And it, like, even if I'm not thinking about it, it feels like it got in there without me even knowing it, because it's so, you know, a family that has never really left home and is very insular and has its secrets. So obviously I'm always sort of going back to Shirley Jackson. You know, people may know most or know her from The Lottery, her famous short story, but her novels are incredible, and that's my favorite.
Most definitely. Yeah, and that really kicked in for me that this was obviously an influence. Quite late in the book, the line where Dara says, "We've always lived here. We've lived here our whole lives." And then I realized, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Shirley Jackson, yeah. Has writing The Turnout changed the way you think about the world of ballet and also this idea of effortless perfection?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of that effortless perfection is going away, in part because you can't hide the toll anymore. There are cameras everywhere, and these are public figures like in nowhere before. And they're also resisting it. They're saying, you know, my mental health matters. And I think that's all good and wonderful. And all that is inspiring. But I also think writing it made me appreciate the experience of ballet even more, because I do see the toll and the cost and the sort of, oh, does one have to do this to do that? You know, there's a part where it goes too far, but I suppose it's the passion that these dancers bring. I watched this wonderful documentary called Restless Creature, which is about Wendy Whalen, who was a famous New York City ballet dancer in the Balanchine mode. And she, this was a documentary about being forced to retire in her late 30s and then going through these surgeries. She couldn't even walk for a while. And she said, if I don't dance again, I will die. And it was the only moment like that in the documentary, but you knew that she really felt that. And one could say, well, how could anyone think that? But I just found it very moving that despite this sort of what she had been through, it was worth it to her. And not only that, but she wanted to keep going. I mean, so I suppose that glamour quotient has not left me. I do find that passion for one's art really kind of beautiful.
Yeah. I understand you're developing The Turnout for a limited series. What can you tell us about the development process?
Yeah, I've been writing it and as a sort of 8-episode limited series, and it's really it was really weird because usually I've had a year or so after the book comes out that I have adapted some of them, and this time it was right after finished the book that we sold it to a studio, and so I had to sort of think about it differently very quickly. In some ways it was easier because it hadn't set in my head as long. Mm-hmm. I could start to think about it visually and think about the visual storytelling, but it's a really great moment for these limited series. I think we have a hunger for them. And with the sort of saturation of TV choices, I think there's something that we all want to get swept away in something for 6 or 8 weeks and not have to worry about finding it again for the next season. So,
exactly,
Yeah,
and I'm looking forward to seeing who plays the various characters because they're so richly developed, and you know I have images of them in my head, as I'm sure all readers do, and it'll be interesting to see how closely or not closely the actual cast members match the images of the characters in my head.
Yeah, that I love that. It's often a schism, you know. It is always hard when you've read the book, but when it comes together, it's the sweet spot.
Yeah. You're also working on a new novel. Is there anything that you can tell us about that?
Yeah, it's sort of early days. I mean, I think it's sort of, I mean, it certainly feels like me, but I am moving away from, for the time being at least, the athletics and into something a little more personal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's worth pointing out also, though, that your previous novel, Give Me Your Hand, was not set in the world of athletics.
That's right.
It was set in the world of academia, yeah.
That's right, The Life of the Mind.
Barton Fink. John Goodman will show us The Life of the Mind.
Oh,
yes,
my
oh
gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the best movie for writers because it really conveys all the sort of terrors of the process. Whenever I'm having a bad writing day, I tweet out that picture of John Turturro from Barton Fink where he's like the wallpaper is peeling off the walls of his hotel room.
Yeah. Yeah. Megan Abbott, thank you very much. Congratulations on the turnout, and I'm looking forward to the limited series, your next novel, and everything else that you're working on.
Oh, thank you so much. This was such a pleasure.
Megan Abbott is the author of The Turnout. You can find out more about Megan and her novel at wpr.org/beta.
It's one of the things that just kind of happens slowly over time. Like you just have these holes you're not really sure how to fill, and then all of a sudden you know what's supposed to go there, and it kind of feels like a miracle.
That's graphic artist and Green Bay native Kristen Radke. She joins us next to talk about the impacts of loneliness. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.